My name's Therese Sweeney. This is the Pioneers of the Fringe project. Today is the 19th of October. I'm interviewing Jim Veller at his home at 35 Riley Road, Leppington.
What's your full name and date of birth?
James Veller. And 2nd, 11th, 36.
Where were you born, Jim?
I was born in Malta.
What town?
Mjar, M-G-A-R-R, which is on the west side of Malta.
And we'll have to... I can pause that, you can.
This is important.
It always happens.
Yeah. Oh, Faye, I've been trying to contact you for quite a long time. Okay.
You've been to school?
Yeah, okay.
I went to St. Mary's.
Oh, St. Mary.
At Liverpool. And St. Therese Primary at Sadlier.
Yeah.
Because I grew up on the housing estate there.
That's correct, yes. You received his...
A long time ago. Yeah. Did your daughters go there? Or
Maria, she's done 1 year in Liverpool.
Maria Vella.
Yeah.
I went to school with Maria.
Yeah.
Is she 50?
About 50? Yeah, she turned 50.
I was wondering. I know Maria. I remember Maria.
Yeah.
How is she?
Well, you know her.
From school, St. Mary's. How is she?
Yeah, you know her. She's well.
Is she here today?
Yeah, she's here.
She was funny at school. She was a bit funny. I remember thinking she was quite a dry humour. She was a bit cheeky. Or I was the athlete.
Right.
See, I was the runner.
Okay. No, she's not cheeky.
Not cheeky at school. No,
she's not outgoing like that.
No, she's a bit. Yes. She was a bit, and she used to get picked on a little bit at school. Mm. I'd love to see her.
Yeah, she's here.
Oh. Now that noise with the Venetian blind, I'm just...
That's the wind,
yeah. I'm wondering if we could... Oh, that's good. Thank you. So she lives with you here?
Yeah, she does. She does.
I remember, I was wondering when I met Jim, I thought about Maria. I wonder if it's they know her or if it's a cousin or daughter.
So public school, you never did everything public school?
No, because I grew up in Busby.
Okay. Yeah, Maria and John, John's second eldest, and he went to...
English Pats, did he go?
They went to Leppington public school.
Yeah.
But then the others went to Camden School.
Ah, yes.
The boys went to St. Greg and...
And where did Maria go in a high school?
Maria, she spent 1 year at St. Mary's.
Yes.
So, when you
then,
now...
That's it, she finished school.
Oh, okay.
Yes. That was year 10.
Oh, yeah, I remember her.
Yeah.
It was hard for her, no?
It was.
I might have been one of those naughty girls that picked on her a bit. I was kind of...
And would she still remember you?
She'd remember me. Not nasty.
No.
Just, I was a bit funny, you know, I was cheeky.
Young, being young, you know.
Yes.
Nothing wrong.
Can you do that?
So we're the same age. Her birthday this year?
Yeah.
No, this year in May.
No,
we have a party. Yeah. We celebrated a party for her.
Yes.
Yeah. It's hard for her, you know, because she don't know how to drive and all that.
She was a bit different. She was quite... was introverted.
Yeah, yeah.
And unfortunately, school can be unkind to those sort of people, you know.
Not just the school. Some peer groups, you know.
That's right.
Yeah.
I know.
More than the school.
Yes.
And then... You have someone like that,
but
you know.
You want to email it to me, or do you want to email it to me?
Looking forward to seeing her.
Yeah.
I remember her face very clearly.
Look, he made it to me, and I emailed it to him, right?
Okay.
That's right, yeah.
And I'm fascinated to hear about seedlings. I'm really looking forward to hearing about how it all happened.
We've got two email addresses, but email addresses.
I'll probably have to have a couple of interviews with Jim, because he's it'll probably be... Because it's important. You can ask.
Size as in selling, as A-L-E-S.
I'll show you some of that.
At Speedy Seedlings, one word.
I've got lots of photos I can show you. I'll show you a film.
Speedy Seedlings. Speedy, as in speeding. Speedy, S-P-W-E-D-Y, double E, D for dog, Y, Speedy, yep. Seedlings, S-W-E-D-L-I-N-G-S, yep. And .com.au. Okay.
Oh, there's just so many photos.
Right. That will be terrific, right? Okay then. Thank you very much for that, right? Thank you. Bye. Bye. Oh, that is a pair. And that's why I've been trying
to get on holiday.
And it's been going on 12 whole months. I'm trying to sponsor one of my nephews on a working visa.
Oh, yes.
Can you help in that regard?
Don't know, maybe. I might be able to offer something. We'll have a think.
Okay, have a think.
We'll talk more about it over the course of our meeting.
Yeah. But I've been talking to...
Working visa here.
She's a migrant. He was a working visa for a couple of years.
Oh, yeah.
1 to 2 years working visa.
How old is he?
He is 46, 47, okay. Somewhere around there. Okay. Just under 50 anyway. And... Okay, sorry about that.
I went to school with your daughter.
Which one?
For 1 year at Maria.
All right.
St. Mary's.
Okay, St. Mary's. Where I put my phone.
She'll remember me.
Yeah. She'll remember. And everyone. That one?
Yes, she's...
She's a little bit 14, you know. But then... She's all right. She's working in the nursery here.
Yes, I look forward to seeing
her. A little bit, sort of thing, you know. You never changed much since you know her.
Yeah, no, she'll know who I am, probably. Yeah. I think we're in this... Yeah. She should remember anyway.
Yeah, so where were we?
I didn't stop it. We're still recording.
Sorry, you have to cancel that.
Yeah, we'll delete that. There's no problem.
Okay.
All that'll be deleted. So let's just have it. Okay.
What were your parents' full names?
Full name, my father was John Mary, and my mother was Francesca.
And you have brothers and sisters?
I have 5 brothers and 3 sisters. And 4 brothers in Australia. 2 of them deceased now. And I have 2 sisters in Australia.
Do they live here or...?
Angela, Rina, and 2 brothers and a sister live in Sydney, and a brother and sister in Victoria.
Okay, so how old were you when you left Malta?
17.
And describe what you left. What was Malta? Describe Malta.
I think Malta, coming after the war and then 1954, things start looking up a bit. So we were pretty well okay, sort of thing. But being young, energetic, and wanted to explore. My mother never wanted me to leave because I come here to work. I was too young. But that's what happened. I'm here. Still here.
So... what was the landscape like in Malta, the town that you left?
Oh, we were all on the land. I'm born on the land. And like my parents, even my grandparents and so on, they all worked on the land, and we worked on the land there. It's a nice little country there. Actually, we've been back last year to have a look, and it was fantastic. 5 months ago, this time we returned back.
So yeah. What did you do on the land in Malta?
Oh, we grow various crops in there. It's different than here, and it was at that time in the early 50s, machinery just starting to appear, small router house, etc. But before that, it was all chipping house sort of thing, where most of it. And like we had a few stone fruit, we got grapes, vines. On the some of the other fields, we grow a bit of wheat, a bit of clover feed for the animals. We used to have a couple of mules, a couple of sheep and all that, and we used them like, you know, we used to work the land with the mule.
So you had a plow and a horse?
Yeah, we had a plow and a mule, yeah.
All the time? Did you get a tractor at any stage?
Lately, at the very end, we got a little router help, but that was towards the very end. I didn't use it very much at all.
So was it a single plow?
It was a little 24-inch cut rotary hoe with the blade, similar to what we got here. They're still in existence these days. But for them, it was very good because we had to alter everything, like the pruning. You had to prune different so this machine can go in between the rows, etc., etc., and everything. But it worked very, very well. It saved a lot of work for the farms and a lot of backache still. Yeah, I'm like them. Back when it was all hard donkey work.
Because a lot of people in Australia aren't alive now that worked with a horse or a mule.
Yeah,
not with that technology, because the tractors came in, you know, here, fairly revolutionised farming. So it'd be interesting to hear how it was working with the mule and plough, and what was the land like itself, literally?
The land, it was all mixed, even if it's such a small country there. But it was, some of the land was rather light soil, pretty light. Where we were working was very nice, quite light soil. But there was some clay soil, and clay soil is hard to work with, whether you're working with a tractor or with a horse or whatever. Even some donkeys were used in some instances.
So what was a typical day for you then, working the farm in Malta?
What do you mean?
A typical day, so you'd wake up and describe.
No, well, that was easy, really. This is what I say about my childhood. Like I tell you, I'm born in 1936, and soon after the war broke out, and we had nothing, you know. You couldn't get these things. Food was rationed. Bombs were falling left, right, and center everywhere, and you're scared. I think the first thing we learned in our age was just the enemy aeroplane, and which is this, and which is the enemy, which is the good one. And then the schools were closed, so I didn't start school till 1945, which I was over 7 years old when I went to school. And I finished in 1950. Yeah, in June 50 I finished schooling, which was a very quick thing. But when we went to school, we were going. We didn't have no books to start with. So even till now, when I listen, I remember more what I listen than what I read. Yeah, but it's been good.
Oh, yes. So when did you start working the farm? So you would have worked on your farm full-time?
With my dad, yeah. Oh, full-time, I was in 1950, which was given, about 13 years old, 14, 13 and a half, something like that. Yeah.
And describe what you do on the farm every day there, like just briefly.
But it was all different, really. One day you're pruning the trees, one day you're chipping a little bit here and there, and one day you're harvesting something, a crop or something in the morning or this and that. But it was all, you know, all clocked in. But it's one thing, we always find time to rest. We're not rushed like here, no, not like these days. It was all the time. We always had about 2 hours for lunch. It was great. My mum always brought normally morning tea and afternoon tea on the field when we were working close to the house. And in the winter time, well before sunset, you know, you start taking off going home. So actually the hours were not very, very long. They were shorter hours than we work in here these days.
That's right. And how much land did you have?
Oh, we had a parcel of land, which was about 10 acres of that, and there was about another 3 acres in bits and pieces, you know, around. Yeah.
The reason I'm just mentioning this is because we hope the stories do go back to some libraries in Malta as well. I always like to ask a little bit about where you're from and to describe where you're from so that linking you back to your country.
When I was 13, 14, I used to take the milk. We used to pack, we had these containers, bamboo containers, and we used to fill them up with fruit or something, and then we pile them up on the top, and then we cover them. And I used to go to the markets in them days, take the, put some produce to the agent. As young as I was, I did go to the market there.
And where was the market?
It was, at that time I used to go to a place called Rabat, and we used to go to another place called Birkirkara. And then shortly after, not very much after, some certain agent came with his little... Actually, it was a car when he first started. It was an old car, one of these, you know, I don't know, Chevrolet, I think it was. And he used to put them all in his car. We come and take it from you and we sell it for you and all that. And so we kept the two going at one time.
And you enjoyed that task?
It was all right. It was good to see. And we were very careful how to handle the produce. So, because the, especially the fruit, is not picked hard. It's picked very soft, which has got to be sold the same day or the next day at the very latest. Other than that, you know, it gets much too soft. But you have to be very careful how you pack it. And even at that age, I was allowed to pack with my dad and my mum.
What was the weight of the fruit? Was it a bushel or was
it? That would be something, I don't know exactly, but I suppose will be about. Have to be, it all depends what you put in them, but then would be about 15 kilos.
So that's quite a bit, isn't it?
It's quite a bit. Used to get heavy, you know, sometimes, but then, yeah.
So you produce 15 kilos a day?
No. That's in one container. It's in one container. Okay. The container holds it about 15 kilos, somewhere about that.
So how big was your orchard?
Oh, we had about, might be 2 acres, say, peaches or something like that, and we got in it. But we had about 5 acres in vines and grapes. Yeah, the rest of it was mostly for,
And you're quite a religious country, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. Still am.
So, as a young boy, you would have gone to, what was your local church called?
The Church of the Assumption. Where is the photo go? Let's go here a minute. I don't know. That's the Statue of the Assumption. The church is not there. The church, when they start building the church, well, before my time, but in my mother's time, and I still remember what I'm going to say. They used to go and collect every family donate an egg or two, and make it all. There is a book out there that I had somewhere. The church is in the shape of an egg, oblong. Yeah, it's a very, very big church. It's not a small church. I don't know how many people sit in there, but it's one of the largest churches. It's not as big as Mostar Church or anything like that, but it is very large. I remember they built a certain part, but the very top of it and
the tower?
The towers, I think you call it, on the end, to one end.
I was going to say steeple, but I don't think that's right, is it? That's
no, the cathedral got the. I remember where they were built.
Yeah, the arches?
No, they were. towers, you call them towers? I don't know if you call them towers or what. I think it's a different name for that.
We get what you mean.
Yeah.
Okay, so you thinking about coming to Australia, how did that evolve? So as a young man, you migrated here at 17.
I had a brother in here and I went there to live with him for a while.
So, yeah, but as in Malta,
yeah,
you've decided to come to Australia.
Yeah.
Tell me about that process.
At that time, a lot of people were coming to Australia. The migration was fully open. We want people from Europe. People from Europe with a bit of, or then you call it education or anything. But what they did, they picked the prime, the pick of the prime, which was a good thing. Now, before we came to Australia, I said this many, many times, the first thing you had to do as an assisted migrant, you would have to go to the police station, see if you got a record. If you got a record, we don't want you. Finish. At that time, you know, right around the war, coming out of the war, was a bit of tuberculosis area. And that's it. Chest x-ray was next. If that was anything to do with that, stop. After that, you had to go for a full medi. The full medi, they never gave you the result in it. You had to go in front of the Australian consular. He wouldn't tell you. He just give you a little interview there. And will inform you in mail.
So you're wondering.
You're wondering. They kept you wondering for a few days or a couple of weeks or whatever.
So you were a single man then?
I was a single man at 17, yeah.
Did you know your wife then?
No, I didn't have a very, very briefly I know here, but no.
Okay.
No.
So we'll get to the wife in due course, but yeah. We'll talk about what you got here by boat.
Yeah, I got here by boat. SS Sydney, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. It, but the ship was named Sydney. Yeah.
How was the trip?
Oh, the trip. There was a lot of people that complained, but we were being in the, sort of the countryside of Malta. We were not very fussy. We had a lot of spaghetti to eat. That was all right with me. And for my friends, we were about 6 or 7 of us from the same little jar, Malta. We were all happy. They used to give us a lot of wine and this and that. Not very good wine, but it was all right for that time. Yeah, that was all right. I didn't complain.
And you, where did you get off the boat at Woolloomooloo?
Yeah, Woolloomooloo is near. The first we went to, we landed in Perth. We were there for a day and a half, something like that, till the boat loaded up and unloaded, whatever they had to do. Yeah, we stopped in Victoria. And this black traveled with us, he was in Australia. Yeah, we landed in Victoria, and this bloke wasn't here before. He said, I'm going to take you to a restaurant. They give you a pie, and one will fill you up, two you couldn't eat. So we went in there and had one pie, because we couldn't eat them. Well, I think I could eat 6 of them at that time. But anyway, it was a nice restaurant, and it was funny, we just had a pie. I never forget. But anyway, back on the boat and then back to Sydney.
That's good, I like that.
Mm.
So where did you stay on arrival?
On arrival, I had my brother to greet me at Woolloomooloo, as I said earlier. And there was another friend, which we still great friends today. We traveled together from Walton. We didn't know that we were going to be neighbors. Yeah, and I went to live there with my brother in Smithfield.
And what was he doing at Smithfield?
He was Marky Garnick. So we sat in there with the Marky Garnick, and I gave him a hand at my spare time.
So what were you doing for work, and what was he growing?
It took me a long time to find a job, but he was growing such as beetroot, carrots at that time, lettuces. cucumber, a few other cabbages. Then he bought his own place soon after, and the same thing happened, and cauliflower and all that things, and all the vegetable things that you can think of, more or less, yeah.
And it was hard for you to get work because of your English?
No. I think early 54, we're talking early 54, and 1953 was a big recession in Australia. And people were still talking about it, and 54 started coming out. Late in 54, it was very easy to get to work. Everybody wanted work, actually. I took many people. Then I started working at the rubber works. And I took a lot of my friends there to work there. And,
where was that located?
Auburn, near Grenville.
What was the name of the...
It was Hardy then.
And what did you do there? Tell me what you literally did.
On the tyres section. I was there for quite a while, really, till I got up on my feet sort of thing, and I done quite a few things in there. We were preparing the material for the tyres, and we done that for a few years. I was operator on a machine there, and cutting all the different sizes and so on. And,
So what? Tell me what you would, like, for example, you were preparing the material. Just describe what you would do. How was that done?
Oh, okay. That was a huge roll weighing about, I suppose, would be weight a ton or so, or maybe about a ton. Pull it up with the chain blocks, put it in this machine, and then we had what we call a cutter. And we cut it on some of them set in different angles and different sizes, so it depends on the size of the tire and they want to build. And just like, you know, one ply and then there was another, and it all the different sizes. It was bench, whether it was a 4-ply, 6-ply tire, 12-ply tire in them days for the truckers and so on. And we prepared all that. Yeah. Then...
How big was the industry, the building you were in? How many staff? How many workers?
Oh, I think there would be more than 400 at that time.
So big?
Yeah, it was pretty big. It was a big factory.
Does that factory still exist?
No, that factory has been taken over, but at that time, that factory, which part of it was in Paddington, did produce footwear as well. And then the footwear came to Auburn in a different section that I did work, but they were producing like sand shoes, all this different footwear, rubber boots and shoes and everything. So of course, after a while, everything went to China, like anything else.
So you got some of your friends work there?
Yeah.
So who were some of your friends? What are their names?
Oh, there wouldn't be. I never say Charlie, there was... Oh, so many of them, George, Joe, I don't know, I can't forget, there is...
That's okay.
It's too many of them. Frank, there was Australian friend, you know, after a while, I was there about, about 10 years in total.
So you got your Maltese friends' jobs there?
No, I was mainly mixed with the Australians most of the time in there. I had some Maltese friends, of course, there, you know, some of the blokes that I took to work in there. And they all done a good job.
You were there for 10 years, so in that time you would have met your wife?
No, in between, what happened in between, in 1958, I took a trip back home. And I said 12 months over Malta, that's when we got married over Malta, when I met her.
So you went back to Malta to find a woman, did you?
At that time it wasn't the intention, but that's what happened.
Okay. That's more what I was asking, because often men do go back to find a wife.
No, I just meant to go back for a bit of a break, see the parents, a bit of holiday at the same time.
So tell me, you don't have to tell me too much, but tell me how you met Mary.
Jane.
And your wife's full name and her former name?
Jane was Semit. And That's what I see. I went fishing with her father one time because her brother is married to my sister. And he took me fishing. We went fishing one time. To make a long story short, he took me inside the house and showing me around. I was more looking at the other side than what he was telling. And that's where it all started, I guess. Yeah.
And you married her there?
Yeah, we married. We went out together in Christmas Eve on the 1959, and we married on the 8th of May 1960.
Pretty quick, really, isn't it?
Oh, not too quick, but yeah.
And Jane came to Australia.
Jane came to Australia.
With you?
With me. We came down. We flew back again.
That would have been a relief.
Yeah, that was a relief. We came on the jet propeller at that time. It took us about, 2.5 days, I think, to come here. But that was very quick comparing to 30 days on the boat.
Where did you settle back?
We settled back, believe it or not, with my brother for a couple of years.
At Smithfield?
At Wetherill Park, which is very close to Smithfield.
So what did Wetherill Park look like then?
I just thought it was very bushy, but there was a few friends at least in there, and we had a couple of friends.
So it was farmland?
It was farmland, yeah. My brother was farming, and I was helping him a bit here and there.
Okay, so where did we go to from, how long were you there for a couple of years?
About 3 years, yeah.
And you were working on the farm?
No, I was still working in the rubber. Then I built this house in here, and we moved up here. I was still working in the rubber works.
So you bought some land in Leppington?
Bought some land in Leppington.
How much land did you purchase?
I bought 15 acres in Leppington that time.
And do you remember who you bought the land off?
I know it was a sheep farm, and I can't think of his name. I knew it for many years, but now 1962.
You'll remember when we meet again.
Yeah, maybe.
So it was a sheep farm.
Yeah, it was a new subdivision. The front road there, that road you see there, it wasn't just. I had a bit of a grade that track there, and it was ready to be constructed, sort of thing.
So, can I ask you how much you paid for the land? Is that okay? Just to get an idea of history and what you paid for land and what year that was.
In 1962, the land around, I'm not going to tell you what I paid for it exactly, but the land around Leppington would be in about £1,800 for 5 acres, give and take a little. So some a bit more, some a bit less.
So where did you learn your building skills from?
I had a good friend of mine, he built his own house. And I had a quote, and you know, to give it to a contractor, I said, I'll never pay it off. So was this Scotch man that I never, he lived next door to us in Wetherill Park. He said, you young man, go to the shop by yourself, a saw and 2 hammers, one in each hand. I went home and sat on that for a while. And I had a good talk to this good friend of mine. We're still great friends today. I met him not that long ago at the entrance. We had a good time together. And I told him the situation. He said, we'll give it a go. And he was so helpful. I never forget him. And we're still great friends. And we'll be great friends till I die.
So, are you still on 15 acres?
No. My brother bought 23 acres below me, and he wanted to sell out, and I bought that off him.
So the land we're on now, how many? 37 acres, is it?
Yeah, 38 something, yeah.
And are we in the original house?
Yeah. Oh, I've got an extension here, but
okay. The original house. So how long did it take to build the house?
Ooh, about, it took me nearly a year.
Pretty
Yeah. Not quite there, but anyway. Yeah.
So what was your journey with the land? So you built the house, and then what happened?
Built the land, the house, and I had a little, try to make a little bit more money, put in the land, and we start growing tomatoes and potatoes. And that's how it all started. Things got a bit tough at one stage, but perseverance and was all right. Yeah.
So how long has Leppington Seedling, so what do you run today?
We run at Leppington Speedy Seedlings, yeah.
Leppington Speedy Seedling.
Seedlings. Yeah.
And how long have you been running that business?
Early 80s, yeah.
So up until, what was the evolution of that, starting that? What happened? How did it take shape?
Oh, it was very busy. Yeah, it took shape actually. One time I went to the market, I was growing seedlings for myself because I was a market gardener between 1967 to the early 80s. I was, you know, just market gardening all over, growing all sorts of crops, tomatoes, captain, you name it.
You grew everything.
Yeah, I grew a lot of septic, and I would go to the market and sell my own stuff and everything.
Okay, so you take it to the market.
I did it all myself.
Who was your agent at the market?
No, I was the agent.
That's smart. So you did it all yourself, which is hard work.
It was hard work, but I got there.
So can I just get a size? How many tomato plants would you have? Your biggest crop?
Oh, we used to grow mainly two crops. The first crop would be about 5,000-6,000. The second crop probably be about 7,000-8,000. And beside that, then we put about the same in capsicum and so on. And then in the winter, when things is back, used to grow a fair bit of lettuces. This was good country here for lettuces. We could grow, but, yeah.
How did you grow lettuces in those days?
Well, it wasn't with seedlings. We used to have a little planter and put the seed in it, and then you just walk and down the beds up and down, and then you got a lot of a line of lettuces. Then you go with the chipping hoe and leave the distance required between each lettuce, and thin it out by hand at some stage.
What types of lettuce did you grow?
Oh, I grow the icebergs mainly, although the mignonette start coming in towards, I suppose it would be in the mid-70s, the mignonette start coming in, which was good.
And what about the types of tomatoes? What types?
Tomatoes, we had a lot of different tomatoes. We had the Cross Lisi, which was a very, very good tomato. We had the Indian River, we had the Florida, we had the Florida, we had... They were all very, very good tomatoes. Then all of a sudden, I think, would be in the late 70s, the hard skin tomatoes start coming in. And there hasn't now starting to come back to taste again, but they were good tomatoes, good for the shopkeeper, but they had no taste in them.
And what about what other vegetables? Just to get a sense of, you said cauliflower?
I wasn't a great cauliflower grower, but I did grow a lot of cabbages in here. Yeah, cabbages was all right. Put it one by one on the truck, stack them up on the truck. It was no bins, them. There's no forklifts or anything.
So did you box them with wooden boxes?
No, actually, we put them loose on the truck. We used to stack them all on the truck, and you stack them in a way that they hold the whole load.
So loose?
Loose, stacked on the truck, loose, and they carry it to the market.
And how would it be at the other end? You'd just unstack them?
You unstack them by hand, like throwing footballs to each other.
And you sell them?
You've got to sell them. If you grow them, you've got to sell them. If you don't sell them, you don't make a living.
Well, you would have had quite a few skills, because you went back a few years there selling them when you were 13.
I wasn't selling when I was 13. I was going to the market. I was delivering to the agent at that time. But then,
so what market were you selling?
I was in the old Sydney market. No, not the Perry market, the growers market. I always went to the growers market. I went in the Sydney market first. And then we went Flemington up and I went to Flemington Market. Still got a stall down there.
Who runs that stall?
A friend of mine at the moment.
Okay, so I'm interested in just exploring that a bit more. So you became a member of the farming co-op, the Leppington. You want to talk about the Leppington?
Yeah, we were exporting a lot of tomatoes to Victoria in them days. And I was, buying my few things in there, and I was nominated to sit as a director on the board, which I did for a while. I was on the board for maybe, 10, 15 years, somewhere there, maybe even a bit more. And then things were getting a little bit too busy up here. I had to retire.
So who were some of the members of the board when you were there?
Well, Peter Tulik was the manager at that time. Sid Sharp was then Steve Backridge. And then there was Ronnie Naughty, very strict man, very good man too. And Ray Edzik, Mike Salakovich. There was a couple of more, right? And Roy.
Persevich?
Nah. I forget what it is. A couple of Australian blacks and a couple of Australian blacks were there too. But we were all very good and we were very strict with each other, and Leppington Co-op was one of the co-ops.
Co-op, and you were talking about some of the board members, yeah. About why you, so...
I retired because I got too busy, and even going to meetings, which I didn't like to miss on too many, it was getting a bit difficult because running the markets and so on, because the meetings were, it's very hard to please everybody, so that's where my... But when we were there, we were very strict, and... As we were saying earlier, Leppington Cup was one of the few surviving cups throughout New South Wales. Many of the cups didn't run. We didn't make a huge profit or anything like that because you couldn't make a profit. A big penalty, I think, you had to pay some, I don't know how much, whatever. But Leppington Cup, it went all right. It was sold after a while and it's in private hands at the moment. Just going.
So who were some of your Maltese farming friends at that time? Did you have around in the area?
In the area, I got in the area here, Charlie Gretchen came in, John Gretch, his nephew, John Mifsit, and there's Grimer, there is Summit in Australia here.
Your brother?
Yeah, my brother, then he's my brother.
Okay, so we'll go over those names again just so we've got it clearly on the microphone, so we've got them. And I think when we meet next time, we might sit in there. There's just a lot of noise coming from there straight into the microphone.
Yeah.
It's really loud.
Okay, in that case, we better make it a day.
But we'll just get another day, if you don't mind. We might just sit in that room. It will be quieter.
We've
got to get you sounding nice. Clean sound, and it's sort of the background's quite
We can do that.
Good.
So
let's just go back over those.
What we say, Charlie Gretch, John Gretch, Mifsit.
Can I stop you there? Can you just, as you say their name, can you tell me what they farmed?
Oh, they farmed, we all farmed similar things, really. I wasn't a big farmer at that time. Some of them were a bit older than me. They had more experience, some of them. And they were a bit bigger. Some of them were about my size. I got John and Jim Grimer in Australia. Got, Mike Summit there. Percy Bartolo. We were all good farmers. And come on.
Sorry.
Okay, and yeah, you want more or?
I'll get that grab. Hang on. Today is the 29th of April, 2012. My name is Therese Sweeney. This is the Pioneers of the Fringe Oral History Project. I'm at 35 Riley Street, Leppington. This is part two of the interview with Jim Vella.
Jim, what's the organisation you run?
Leppington Seedlings, Peter Seedlings.
And that's something that we want to talk about today is your company. When did you first start the company? What year did Leppington's Speedy Seedlings start?
In the very early 80s, I think 1982.
And let's talk about the years before that led to that company developing. So what was some of the inspirations to start your own seedling company?
That's really a hard one to answer, but it was all a new concept at that time, very new. There was another person, I think it was in Patterson, that was doing some seedlings, and one of the brothers, I think, got some seedlings from there, and I seen this, and I was doing a bit of work with the boys at Campbelltown College, Marist College, and just a little bit later, I decided to plant a few, and I went a couple of years, and then one day I had a few too many plants. I said they're too good to throw away, so I took them in the markets, and that's where we start. We start from there. And they were well taken. And I got a couple of orders practically straight away, and they just kept on coming. And where we are now.
What type of plants were they?
I think they were cabbage plants, the first lot.
So, to make it easy to begin with, what sort of seedlings do you provide today?
We provide all the vegetable seedlings. It doesn't matter what it is, and we do the mainly tree stage, because other than that, it gets too far. We do some in South Australia as well, but it gets too far and transport getting too expensive to go the distance.
So can we talk about how the operation runs? So how does it start in terms of the stages of?
We buy the seed, and we buy only the best seed we can buy from certified merchants, seed merchants, and we germinate the seeds. We got our own media, we do the media, and we germinate the seed, and we grow it to a stage where the market gardener can handle it and plant it in his own ground to a finished product. And from there, the grower finish the product, taking it into market and off to the consumer.
So when you're growing the seeds, what do you use to grow them in, and what are the mixes?
We use a peat moss and vermiculite mix, and we do fertilizers with it.
And so you grow all vegetables. What did you start with? You started the cabbage?
No, we start cabbages. We start lettuces. It all depends what the season like. You know, silver beet or spinach, as it's more known than silver beet. Oh, you know, broccoli, cauliflower, all the brassica, and so everything else.
Yeah, she's right.
Yeah.
So can we talk about the cycles then, weather, and how the seasons impact, and talk about what you literally have each season?
Well, from nearly 30 years ago, times change a lot. At that time, we used to have everything in season. Now, the present time, everything is stretching to go the full year round, and there is a supply of everything mostly every day of the year of the same thing. It didn't matter whether it was a summer crop or a winter crop. So,
but it did start cyclically, and that's changed.
Yeah, like, you know, you used to grow just lettuce. There would be a few beetroot, which we didn't do in seedlings, and a few other things, tomatoes and capsicum that were all summer. But these are things are coming more. The season is getting longer and longer as we go along.
Why is that? Or how is that?
Oh, there's several reasons for that. The supplier wants a continuous supply. So the market gun is trying to stretch out to the limit all the time and keep the suppliers happy. And that's one of the main reasons. And also, the expense has got so much bigger that you've got to grow so much more to make a living these days.
So at the beginning, who were you supplying?
Oh, I only had a handful of growers to begin with. Only would have been about three or four, and then it came to six, but it expanded very quickly.
It did it?
Yeah.
So the growers were local, were they?
To start with, it was local, but it didn't take long before the Victorian growers heard about it, and I was sending as much into Victoria as I was selling locally, if not more.
Okay, can you talk more about that? Who you supply, like how the supply has expanded over the years, and talk about periods of time, like so in the late 80s or in the 90s, did it shift the shifts? Or?
Well, it kept expanding. Like you started there, it was all different. And like if we talk about tomatoes to start with in the late 80s, we used to do about maybe rough figures. Million and a half of seedlings, just tomato seedlings and capsicum seedlings, especially tomatoes. They were all grown outside in the field. These days, that's all gone. We don't do much for outside, next to nothing, only very few. It's all grown inside, and the picking period is much longer. They get more yield to the plant. It's a lot of more expense, but they get more yield to the plant. The same with the cucumber. We used to go grow heaps of outdoor cucumbers in them days, and now it's all grown all inside undercover. And so many other crops, but they are the majority too that are grown inside, I think. Yeah, capsicum is starting, and there's a few eggplants starting to grow. But they were all summer crops. And we used to go, all right, in the summer, we got the lettuce seedlings and capsicum, tomatoes, etc. And if you had anything, then the winter time will be coming. You start doing the winter crop, the brassica, and all them, like broccoli, cabbages, cauliflowers, silver beet, and a few other winter crops. But since then, even the Asian vegetables it's a big part of the business. Yeah, we got a lot of Asian vegetables which 30 years ago didn't even exist. Nobody knew about them.
Can you name some of those?
Oh, some of them is so many. We got the coriander, with very much. All the herbs. The herbs was, I think of the past, the herbs were very, very minimized. At the time now, it's big grower. We also got bok choy. Choy choy. Yes. And.
Say them, no, please.
Yeah, Chinese. Feel free to add. Chinese cabbage. Yeah. What else we do? In the Chinese line. Oh. But there's so many of them.
Yes, sumo.
Yeah, that's a Chinese cabbage, yeah.
So this is 30 years ago,
you said? No, this is now. Yeah, 30 years ago, we didn't have any of them, nothing whatsoever. Nothing, it's all new. We had some Chinese cabbage, like the bok choy and all that, but these days I got lots of different things. That's only a small portion what I mentioned here. And
in terms of seedlings, you producing seedlings to be. Well, how many seedlings would you be producing a year?
How many seedlings? We're doing more about 3.5 to 4 million a week seedlings at the moment. But at that time, I remember one time we didn't want to do much at all. I said, I don't want to go there, I don't want too much trouble. A couple of hundred thousand would have been plenty.
You've got trouble now, haven't you?
Well, there's plenty of work, that's for sure. I don't have the money side.
So expanding into the Chinese market was because the demand was there.
Well, yeah, when you're in business, you got to go with the flow, and you got to supply, you got to accommodate everybody. And this is one thing I never said no to nobody, except one bloke one time approached me, he wanted to grow some expensive things, I declined.
So things are moving indoors, you mean into hot houses? And,
yeah.
And I understand that now, what you're talking about with that. What have been some, I know that's a big question, but what has been some of the biggest shifts you've seen in the 30 years?
Some of
these
the
changes in 30 years in terms of your business?
I think the biggest change we've seen, even in the market garden, like 30 years ago, this colored lettuce, the what we call these days the salad mixed lettuces, hardly existed. Now it's a big thing. And the herb is grown, huge. Huge. The herb has grown huge, especially in the last 7 years or so.
And who instigates that? Who has affected that growth? How does that start?
I'm not sure exactly how we start, but I think it's the restaurants, they putting so much into it, and we got to see so much cooking on television these days and everything. I don't think it's got something to do with that. That's my opinion. Not necessarily the right thing, but that's what I think it's got something to do with it.
So have you seen a decline in any vegetables, a decline in demand?
Oh, no. So far, we have not been affected. The vegetable industry has not been affected by the imports. There is talks about it and everything. And I was talking to my son is Dr. John, and I think they call it the protocol, we got a very hard strict in Australia. Yet the imported products, whether it's vegetable or whatever, they only got to comply for about less than a third of what we do in here. I don't know what that means exactly. I'm not a chemical man. But to me, it means that the overseas growers are putting vegetable in the country here, that in this country, in Australia, we're not allowed to use them type of chemicals. That's what it means to me. I'm not 100% sure if I'm said it right exactly, but it's on that line.
So, what do you see as the future of your organization?
The future of our organization in here, it relies on the market garden, and the market garden relies on his market where he can make a living or not. What we've been saying recently, actually I heard Alan Jones talk about it a couple of days ago, not very good, how the supermarkets are not giving enough money to the grower, and they putting, I think if I heard him right, it was something like they pushing the price of grocery a little bit above, and they're taking as much as they can of the fruit and veggies. They're giving very little to the grower, and the grower can hardly survive. If the grower can survive, we can't survive. It's as simple as that.
Yes, interesting times. Not so good, but
now, the last 20 years or so, especially the last 20 years, the market garden has been coping by growing more, buying bigger machinery. But these machines they're buying, they do cost a great lot of money, and we're talking big hundreds of thousands to work efficiently. And if they're not getting their prices, some sort of price to cover them expense, Well, they have to pay for them. If they don't pay for them, they're going to lose them. And they can only do, the machine can only do so much can do. You can work it 24 hours a day, but how many 24 hours a day can you work anymore? I think, to me, it's reaching to the limit where we reach the maximum production. We can always improve, and it has always room for improvement, but the way we improved in the last 10, 15 years and the biggest machinery they got, I don't know how far they're going to go. The only thing I've seen in the last, will be 20 years, yeah, or better. I remember when we used to go to the old market. I'm going back to the shops now, where the old market, you could go in there. I was a market gardener, as we said earlier. And when we went in that market in there, which was a very hard place to get in and out, but when you went in there, you waited till the market is open, and there would be thousands and thousands of little shopkeepers coming into the market, and they all got, they haven't got trucks, there was no forklift, so there was a forklift for the very, you know, little, very little, next to nothing. But then,
wheelbarrows.
They all had their wheelbarrows, and they were not huge buyers, but they all wanted, and many of them wanted to buy what they had to buy and go back, because they didn't have anybody, they didn't employ many people. They had to open the shop, the corner shop. And that was so many of them that they got, the market was active all the time, or most of the time. Always was and always will be. There is always a time where there's a glut in the market, and consequently, the price, when it's too much of the stuff, the market will come down. But it only used to last a short time. It's not a continuous thing where you don't make... It's not a continuous thing where you're selling your product for less what it cost you. You might do it for a short period, but then it always went up again and went up and stayed up for a reasonable amount of time. Like I remember when I start market gardening, all Leppington in here, all the growers in Leppington, which Leppington was a good growing tomato area, their biggest crop was 3,000, 3,500 of plants was a big crop. And they done one crop early and one crop late. So that's 7,000 tomatoes in 12 months. And that was enough to keep the family, keep the farm going, make them living. And many of them, they bought the farm, the acreages next door, and they bought the place next door, and they done this, and they all had their own houses and everything. Now, if you go and try to grow this amount, small amount these days, people don't even want to know you. And this is where we're going. Now it's all big, and as we were saying, there was the huge quantity coming into the old Sydney market, and we shifted into Flemington market, which was still the same thing for a short time. And then as it started, the big buyers, there was more comfort for the trucks to come in, and more big trucks, more forklift, everything is done fast. A few shops expanded and they were good, but the chain stores start pushing and getting bigger and trying to, I don't know how to say it exactly, because it's hard to say, but it seems to me that when the supermarkets, the big supermarkets are selling products, in one shop they sell it at a certain price, and a couple of a few kilometers away, 20 or 20 kilometers or 10 kilometers away, they got all different prices for the same item in the same shop, sort of. To me, that does not ring the bell. If they got to sell low, they got to sell it in all their shops at the same prices. But then again, as we said, Alan Jones was onto that and trying to help out, whether, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, that's, thank you for that. Yeah. Let's go back to when you first started and you were dealing with merchant seed suppliers.
Yeah.
So how did that operate, and What were they supplying you with? And where did they get their seeds? Where did the seeds come from?
Well, where did the seeds come from?
Talk about at the beginning. Where did the seeds come from?
We had DH Australian Company seed that was here forever, as far as I can remember. We had Henderson at that time, and we called it newer seeds, I think. There wasn't many more. There was only about four major companies at that time. I think we had another one up here. Chacon started about that time, too. But anyway, it was only a few seed merchants, but seed merchants, especially when it comes to breeding, it is a very, very specialized field. And this is what we got. We got now, like 30 years ago, hybrid seed was practically in existence. Now everything is hybrid on top of it, and everybody trying to improve. I can understand where the seed companies spend a huge amount of money on research to create a strain of seed. But then to create a hybrid strain of seed could take up to 5 years or better to start with, or maybe more, maybe seven.
Do you work with that?
No, my son does a little bit of that, but we only got one line of commercial. We don't do around seeds, not whatsoever, except this one line. We buy the seeds, as I said, from the certified merchants, and they specialize in the field, and that's what we deal. But now we've got several seed merchants, more than we had at that time.
Are they national or international, these merchants?
I think that's a lot of them mixed. Some of them do their breeding in Australia. A lot of seed gets imported and everything, and these days you don't know what's happening.
So let's talk about your family back then and what you were all doing at the beginning of the business, because obviously your wife had a big, contribution.
Oh, she created all this. She was a big help for me. And I think if she didn't, if it wasn't only for her, I probably would give it throw my towel in, because I wouldn't have to. The time to do everything myself.
So how did you both work back then? What was the regular day in the business?
No, the regular day was quite okay. Like, we're done, and we had Maria, she was working here, my eldest daughter, and at that time she always was here since day one of the nursery, and they were both a big help. And at that time, I had to look after everything. But there's one thing, I said, do this, and do that. And I didn't look at anything else. That had to be done, and it was done. And that was what kept us going all the time. And then very soon after, we started putting a couple of workers on, and we went from there.
So what did you do when you say do this and do that? Let's talk about the tasks, so people understand.
Okay, the task was, we're starting with the seeding program. The seeding, we done it funny at that time. We only had a small little machine in here. But that was the most fun I ever had in my life, even if it was hard work. As I said, I had during seeding day was a Saturday, and that's where the children were home from school. And we used to start doing the seeding. I prepared the mixing, which was all done by hand and everything. And all the trays, which we got now, it was all done by hand for a few, or maybe the first year, maybe a bit less, because it didn't take long. You had to mechanize. And the seeding, it was a chain. It was great, I reckon. I had a couple of local schoolboys, and they used to come and help fill the trays. And I had my own school children, which were all here. I had them organized. I'm just trying to picture how I had them organized. You're asking me for 30 years ago, but I can picture it, I think. Yeah, Maria was always doing whatever job had to be done, on and on. And then I had a group of filling trays. Filling the trays in.
So what are they filling them with?
Peat moss and vermis. The system hasn't changed. The mix itself hasn't changed much. Of course, different fertilizers, they change different fertilizers and so on. But the materials are much, much the same.
So are they in the same we see today, the plastic? Were they?
Actually, no. They're polystyrene trays to start with. Yeah, and I had a lot, few polystyrene, and a few years later I switched on to plastic. And we used to stick him there. Maria normally passed the trays to the seeding person. Carmen was the seeding. Wait on. Now, Francis. Francis, well, I had this sort of a table there with a thing with a hand like that, and she used to pull, we call it the dimpler, and used to make the seed working. But it was all the hand, you pull the handle there, and that was Francis' job doing there. Then Carmen was the, always was doing the seeding on the seeding machine. I had Miriam.
Peter, what he was doing.
Peter was always running in the shed most of the time, carrying trays to the shed, and he filling trays up as well. And Miriam was covering, because I had him in a chain. Miriam was covering all the time. And John and Peter, most of the time, they done whatever had to be done. You always got to have them first, couple of person too. And they were carrying the trays away and putting them in the shed and watering and everything else. But it was, we were a group of young, they were a group of youngsters, and they were the best people, and we had so much fun together. We used to go and have a cup of tea and do this and do everything together. It was so much fun, and we enjoyed every minute of that work. Even though it was hard work, we laughed at it, and we had jokes, and it was... But we were only about 5-6 people then, and it was different then. Now it's about 60 people. It's different. It's all done different. It's very hard, yeah, to go have a cup of tea with everybody, and everybody got different opinions. Things changed.
Did you pay the children back then?
Yeah, I paid them. I gave what they considered it was good money. I forget what I paid them. Wouldn't be huge money in them days. We were talking 30 years ago. But they were more than happy, I had a couple of young girls. They used to come and do a little bit of weeding for us on the weekend, a couple of schools. Oh, they used to love them. Actually, some of them, even when they finished school, there was about 3 or 4 of them. They were here for quite a while till they had their family. It was all, and they got married, and some of them got their own business now and so on. But we all say hello to each other and we have a laugh.
So the seedlings would go to the shed. So you said how many of those would be in the, tell me about the next process then. So you're planting the seedlings.
We planted the seedlings and we put which everything done with machine in these days. But we used to do everything by hand. Like we had this little machine which was hand operated, and then we had to cover him by hand. We had to stack him. We had a tractor to carry him into the shed. We had to water by hand or water with the sprinklers, whatever. And
then what would happen?
Then when they got a certain size, we always harden outside. We always, we never had a soft plant. We always had to give a good plant to the grower. If you leave him sometimes inside too long, we always give him a bit of hardening time.
So you say they go outside. What would they do outside? They'd sit in there?
They sit in there. You give them the right amount of water. They get the fresh air and they get a little bit...
photosynthesis,
but,
a bit of sunlight.
But they get the sunlight, they get a little bit, it's a hardening system. You don't want to sell a very soft plant,
okay.
not for commercial growers.
And And how long would they spend outside back then?
Oh, about a couple of weeks or so.
And then what would happen?
Oh, they might have gotten, they used to come in here with their little trucks and going. It was many times that they had about 6 trucks in the driveway coming up here. Not big, but they were kept on coming. They kept on coming, all that. And we had the system, we all driven into the plant in there, which not like we do today. And we driven the truck next to them. And if there's 2 or 3 growers there, we all help each other load the trucks up in the way they went.
So when you're looking at, and then you'd start again?
Then you start again, the same cycle over and over again.
But today it's different because the cycles aren't cycles.
Well, today is different because the cycle, like as we said before, we're stretching the strains of the product, whatever the vegetable is, and from 2 months has gone to 3 months, 4 months, 6 months, and been practically 12 months in the year. Many growers got 12 months in the year for many items.
So you look out here and there's all that land.
Yes.
And you've got things there. How is that at the moment? What's there?
There is, I don't know how many kinds of lettuces there is, but there will be about 50 types of lettuces in there. There is a lot of, again, broccoli. There would be about 10 different broccoli things. There might be 10 or 15 more different cauliflowers in there.
So you're saying different types of cauliflowers?
Yeah, well, they all cauliflower. They all look the same, but we got certain, we're talking about cauliflower. One cauliflower mature in 12 weeks, the other 14 weeks, 12 weeks, 16 weeks, or whatever.
So different stages of growth.
Different stages of growth.
Are they different grades of quality?
No, they are, well, let's hope they all go to the number one all quality. That depends a lot on the grower as well then.
So what else do you have out here?
Yeah, we have the lettuce as well. We have the silver beet. We have the Chinese veggies. What else we have up there? We have a lot of herbs.
Spinach.
Spinach or silver beet, yeah.
Fennel.
Yes, that's a, yeah, fennel. We have fennel. We have we've got the lettuces.
Lake.
Cabbages.
Lake.
Yeah, lake. Chives, etc. Onions, a few onions, not a big thing in onion. Onions, not a big thing, but a small thing.
But there's a lot out there because there's a lot.
There's a lot out there. Some of the growers take truckloads every week.
So what's, okay. So how long have you got them? So there are different stages. So what's the cycle now?
We're getting to the winter time where the cycle is a bit longer. It could be 6 weeks plus, it's 7-8 weeks.
Because of the sun?
Because of the cold weather coming and everything grows slowly. You got the winter time. In the summertime, you get in about 5 weeks.
So summer is a higher turnover of work?
Faster. You got to move much faster in the summertime.
And what are you? So what's leaving here every week? And let's talk volume.
Oh, I have. If we said we're doing about 3.5-4 million plants a week, they have to move out. Other than that, you're going to have nowhere where to put the next lot. And that's the problem when it starts raining. You've got to be very, very careful how things go. But luckily, the growers these days, where before we used to wait few weeks for the weather to dry out. These days they don't seem to wait. The rain stopped and they seem to be planting the next time. How they do it, I don't know.
So you're open air out there.
Yeah.
And you've got the cover for the birds.
We've got the cover for the hail net, yeah.
Is that to keep the birds away?
Hail net mainly.
Hail net, okay. Yeah. So how much of netting have you got?
There's over 10 acres of hail netting there.
So, and it's outdoor. So what sort of impacts does, state the obvious, but I'll get you to talk about what the impacts of the weather, the rain, what are some of the likely...
When you get this February wet, humid weather, I think even you yourself feel like sweating, you don't feel like doing anything, and the plants is very similar. Like if you got to be on your toes all the time trying to control them, because in the humid weather and the rain and there's no sun and everything, and they can easily go very, very soft plant.
How do you control it?
Ooh, with great difficulties, I say, if you can.
Do you lose a lot with the bad weather?
The biggest problem, if you got seeds outside or something like that, you've got to have a storm or something, it affects the germination and so on. But as far as losing with the weather, the rain, no, I don't think so. I don't think it does create a lot more work, but I don't think we lost much with the rain. If you got a hailstorm, then that's disastrous. Even with the hail net, we haven't got everything under the hail net.
So, what have been some of the big disasters that you've experienced with the weather? Like, ooh. I hear it with the tomato growers, they talk about the 56 hailstorm or something.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah, yeah, well, we had one hailstorm in here before I had that cover on, and it was one of the biggest disasters that I have ever had.
Tell
here.
Me about that.
Oh, it was one day, actually, we had two hailstorms, one was in the market garden, and we had hail in three times hail in the one afternoon, and I remember I had a beautiful tomato out there, and that was gone, and we did not get the big hailstorm like they got in the city. You remember when was that in the, I forget what year was that.
You mean in the recent times, in the 90s or?
Yeah, somewhere in the 90s, I think, where all the cars got damaged,
yes,
and so on.
I was at Kensington, I know.
Yeah, but we didn't get all that. But we did get a hailstorm one time where I lost a lot of plants in here, and it was disastrous. Then you have to start all over again. And the thing is, when you lose them, you have to go and dump them, a lot of work, and go and dump them. Then you got to start again. Then you got to hurry up because you don't want to keep the growers waiting. And so it's part of living.
So you've got these. You've got a big shed at the back. You want to describe the sheds and what goes on in them?
Ooh, when you think it's a lot of storage goes in there, and it doesn't matter how much building you got, it doesn't seem that you ever have enough, like anything else.
So you had something over there, we're photographing the machines there.
Yeah.
Can you describe what goes on in that shed there as part of the...
Oh, yeah, that's all right, that's okay. As you see, we got the trays outside, and that machine these days is not hand filling anymore, because we have one person putting the tray in, we have the operator of the machine, and we have two people moving the trays. We put them on the pallet, and we got a tractor taking them to where they belong.
And you've got 60 staff. Oh, there's another shed? Is there another shed or just one there?
Oh, there's the storage shed up on top.
Okay,
yeah.
And the storage shed, what does that store?
Oh, it stores all kinds of things like materials for the ceiling. You've got fertilizers. We put plants before we put them into the truck sometimes, and all sorts of things.
You didn't always have trucks, did you?
No, actually, when I first started here, yeah, that's an interesting question. I just had a small little truck.
What type of truck?
It was a little Mitsubishi, about what, a 3-ton truck or something, 4-ton truck. That's what we market gardeners had all the time. And I started with the ceiling, as I told you earlier. I got so busy that I just had to say, you do this, you do that, and it was considered a done sort of thing. And I told the grower, when they stopped putting it, I said, look, I haven't got time to deliver. You have to come and pick it up. Everybody come and pick it up for several years. Maybe 4 or 5 years. I don't know exactly how long. And then we start delivering, and that was put a lot of more pressure on me when I start. I used to go Even I used to go very early in the morning. I used to meet a lot of the growers in the market, used to go in the market there and meet the growers there and come back here, so I'd be here at 7:30 to do the nursery work.
So what were you going to the market for?
No, I delivered the plants in there.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, and the growers, because all the growers take their stuff to the market, all their produce to the market. And we meet each other. It was a good system because they came in there. I had my truck in there, boom, 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 from one truck to another. And I somehow I had the time to do that. Yeah, and that was the only way I could do some delivering. I did went to a couple of farms, but then I started going to a couple of farms. And that was hard, then getting hard because I was getting, you know, coming home because I had the other customers that they come and pick up from here. And I had to be here because she never had to do anything with the customers very much or say goodbye to them and this and that. But
it's a lot of work, isn't it,
Dan? It was a lot of work. And sometimes, you know, when I come here, there's about 4 or 5 people waiting to be served in here.
So you had the nursery here.
Yeah.
Is that here now, or is it changed? The
place hasn't changed.
Yes.
The same thing, like a few things have changed, but now.
So you took, when you take this seedlings to the markets, yeah. Are we talking Flemington markets?
We're talking Flemington markets, yeah.
And how many would you be delivering every day back then?
I didn't go every day back then. I might go on twice a week because I didn't have the time. I had to make time for other things, so I would be delivering, 6 by 20. Of 150,000, maybe 100,000, something like that. It was always, you know, a fair size.
And that was in the Mitsubishi 3-tonner?
Yeah. is it 3-tonner or is it 5-ton? Something like that, anyway.
So talk about
it's still got the truck there.
That's, we'll have to have a look at that. So tell me about where did you go to with trucks after the Mitsubishi? You started delivering. Why did you start delivering?
Because the growers, and that's commodity everybody wants these days, and it started way back then, you know, everybody is at home, time, everybody got no time, every time, you know, trying to make time.
And your delivery was local, or how was
local,
it?
Locally, yeah. Well, I used to send interstate, but that was picked up from home on pallets by trucks. We used to pack them all in cardboard boxes. These days we don't, these days we put them in racks. But at that time, we pulled all the plants out and packed them in cardboard boxes.
Now, can you talk about where do your seedlings go now, today? How far is your reach?
These days, I think because I'm not heavily involved these days in this, I got the 2 sons and they... manage the place and to my knowledge we do New South Wales, which we always did, we do Victoria and we do a good part of Queensland.
Do you know how many farms you're supplying roughly?
No, I don't know exactly that one, but it's quite a number of farms.
It's quite a contribution, isn't it?
Really? Yes,
it all starts here.
Yeah, but don't forget, the farms these days we supply, like before I tell you, we had several trucks coming in and out of here, but one farm these days will make up maybe 20 of them, small farms I'm talking about, maybe even 50.
That's right.
So, yeah, it's not just the number of plants, it's not the number of growers, it's more of the number of plants that you supply.
You've done well to keep your organisation, haven't you? Your company, have you been threatened by bigger organisations or?
No, I always believed that. I never bothered about there's a couple of positions, that's all right, there's nothing wrong, it keeps you on your toes. But I always said, and I said to my sons when I start getting backing off a bit, I said, don't be bothered if you're beaten on price or anything like that. Don't you ever get beaten on quality. Stick to quality and you don't go wrong.
That's good advice.
Yeah.
So what else would you like to talk about in the business? I mean, it's been covered quite nicely. That's a nice kind of overview. I mean, there's so much. But some of the other bigger changes, can you think of, I won't keep you too much longer, but can you think of some of the technologies changed, obviously, machinery?
The technology changed. I was very lucky, as I told you, my son and John, especially John. I'm not talking so much about Peter. That's one thing I was telling when we were going doing the deliveries. Peter was going at high school then, and he finished school pretty early, Peter. And when he was 17, he got his truck license. And he was out on the truck. That was the end of the trucks for me, sort of thing, you know. But the other son, John, not to mention about the gears as yet, he went to university and he got his agriculture degree and chemistry degree, etc. And he also a doctor in biochemistry. And so the technical part, I'm not going to argue with doctors and professors anymore. I did have a lot to do earlier days with the University of Sydney, especially Cooperative Farms. As we said earlier, St. Greg's School, I was giving them a bit of a push with the young lads there. And, of course, like the technical part is, I don't do much with that now, but John has been a very, very big help to the growers. And yet, Peter has been a huge help to the nursery. He's done the deliveries physics for many years.
Sorry, he did physics.
Yeah. And, he's done a lot of delivery for many years, but then he found himself, he had to stay home and manage the place, so he doesn't go much on the track. We've got drivers and that go out, whether interstate or whether here locally, even the local run, which I always wanted to keep that, you know, in the family sort of thing. But it was impossible. But some nice drivers here, and they take care of the growers as well. And the girls, Maria, still working with us, as you see here. And my other daughter, Frances, she got married and she had her own thing going, so she's elsewhere now. And Carmen, which is twin daughter with Peter, she does a fair bit of work in here, but she also got her own little patch of plants in there, sort of thing. And she's going, so that's all right, but we're still all coming together, and most of the time, Mommy still make morning tea for all the whole family and so on. So she's a very, very busy woman. And, Maria helps too, like always. And, we get together a few times a year, like whole family sort of thing, and we have the same fun as we always did. Of course, it didn't mean we never had an argument or anything like that. It'd be happy a fool if I didn't say that. But then, no, we kept together, and the whole family stuck together, and I'm very proud of that, the family's still here together.
Yeah, I think that's very commendable, because to keep the family in the business.
Oh, that is the most difficult thing in business. It's very, very difficult. I don't know how I done it. I managed to, and that I've done it somehow.
Yeah, you both should be very proud of yourselves. You must have something going for you then, Jim.
I don't know what I've got going, but I say my prayers every morning, and I hope the Lord, good Lord, hears them.
It's a good start.
Yeah.